everybody, and welcome back to The Therapy Show. This is episode 7 of The Therapy Show. I'm Scott Johnson. That's Wendy Dunford.
Hello.
For those new to the show, perhaps, maybe, may as well just clue you in here at the start of the latter half of this season that I'm an idiot, and that's my sister, and she's a therapist, so that's why she's here, and I'm here just to make it all work.
Record.
Exactly. So you're going to start us off this time. So what the hell does that mean? Go ahead.
Yeah,
what is this?
You should be nervous.
All right.
I am going to start out by asking you a question.
All right.
That is one of the most powerful questions I ever ask any of my clients.
All right.
And I'm always surprised. Like, what?
Surprised by their answer?
No, I'm surprised how powerful it is, I guess. Because I think, you know, you get comfortable talking about certain things. And then you bring it up with somebody and they're like, oh, we do not talk about that, you know?
Yeah.
And this is one of those topics that is taboo on some level,
mm-hmm.
In many ways. And we're going to talk about why and the intricacies of this topic. But so I'm going to start it with the question.
All right.
Now, Scott, I want you to think about your very, very first memory with money.
Memory with money?
Yeah. So your first, the first time you knew it had meaning or power or value or anything.
Okay.
So think about that for a second.
Okay.
Don't jump to it because I want you to really go as young as you can.
Far back as I can.
Far back as you can. And.
All right.
You got a good one?
I think I have a good one.
Okay.
I don't know if it's, it may not lend itself well to where you're headed, but let's find
All
out.
All right. So tell me.
Okay.
What's your first memory of money?
My first memory of money. Not so much its power as a financial thing or a thing that gave you power or abilities to do things or anything.
Yeah.
My very first memory of money is choking on a quarter when I found money. I think it was babysitter money that mom had put on the table.
Yeah.
Because they're cheap and paid in quarters for some reason. And I remember grabbing a quarter and I remember putting it in my mouth. And I'll never forget, this is gross now, but as a kid, whatever, everything's.
Tastes like metal.
Yeah, that metal taste was really weird, kind of coppery and strange. And then the whole thing's a bit of a blur, but I remember Dad picking me up and whacking me on the back really hard, trying to get that quarter out, and eventually did. And I remember that's the first memory I have of any kind of currency, of any kind of like thing that seemed to be of value or that somebody wanted, because I remember very specifically after that, Dad rinsing that quarter off and still giving it to the babysitter.
Oh, that's
and I
awesome.
Was probably like 4 or 5, maybe at the most.
That is awesome.
So that's my first memory of that. And I did, you know, I didn't buy anything with it. I didn't see that it would get me something, but.
Right. But you learned
it could
that
kill me. I knew that.
You learned money could kill you in 1 minute. You learned money could kill you.
Totally.
And that it was worth something, worth the thing that could kill you, washing it off and then giving it to someone else as
that's,
payment.
That's true. That part really does stick with me because at the time I just thought, and I still think,
get
another quarter or don't ever use that quarter again or put that in a box and keep it as a keepsake of, hey, remember when Scott almost choked to death?
On this quarter.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. So we'll analyze that a little bit, but let me tell you a couple of the answers I have gotten from people over the years.
All right.
And anyone listening, I want you to do the same thing. Think about that first time with money. Most people go, oh, I was 13 and I got my first job. But that's typically not the first time you knew money existed. And so try to go as tip of the carrot, you know, my favorite.
Tip of the carrot.
Go to the beginning. Like, when did you really first realize it came into your consciousness that people pass around paper and metal bits and you can get things from it and exchange and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Okay, so think about that as we're talking. But so let me tell you a couple things clients have told me that are really interesting.
All right.
You know, every couple that comes in, money is a thing usually.
Yeah.
Typically because, and it's not about not having enough money sometimes.
Well, isn't the stereotype that it's always the arguments or the breakdowns in marriages are always marriage or sex?
Yeah.
Or both.
Marriage or sex. You mean money or sex?
What'd I say? Marriage?
Yeah.
Money. I'm sorry.
And marriage.
You know, marriage is a real problem for marriages today.
Yeah. And it's, and there's a reason. And it's because of this question I posed at the very beginning, which is, what is your relationship with money? How did it develop? And then what is your partner's relationship with money and how did that develop?
Right.
And then you put the two together and I'm pretty sure you don't have the same thought about it
right.
or the same experience or it doesn't hold the same sway. So a lot of savers will marry spenders and a lot of spenders will marry savers. And you're like, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And it does actually when you start to think about it. But so let me tell you about one guy. So I said, tell me about your first memory with money. And this is a guy who's, you know, 35 years old. Doesn't have anything to his name, has worked on and off, done things, you know, not just no house, no life really financially. He's just kind of squandered a lot of money.
Right.
And it really, really sad about that. And I said, okay, let's talk about your first relationship with money. And sure. It was buying some candy
as
a 5 or 6 year old, sitting on the curb with his friend, sharing it with a friend. And the friend, the joy on that kid's face.
Oh, wow.
So in his experience, it was money buys other people joy.
Oh.
And I get so much joy watching that. So you can imagine most of the money he's made in his life and spent has been spent on other people, giving it away, lots of really fun dates for girls that turned into nothing. You know, like
probably one of those guys that's in a group of, let's say, 10 people at a restaurant. And they all have that look on their face like, are we doing stuff at checks or whatever? You know, that awkward.
And he's
the one that's, I'll just do it.
Yep.
Yeah, probably.
And feels awesome, but has no money to actually be doing.
Right.
It's not making a wise choice. So for him, it was, and this was awesome because he came in because he's like, I want to get married and I want to be grown up. He wanted to stop being Peter Pan.
Sure.
And I said, you know, one thing is, you know, you don't have a dime to your name and that's, unfortunately, pretty unappealing.
Yeah, it is kind of.
Yeah, for, you know, someone looking to settle down kind of thing. Anyway, I'm going to report he is now happily married. But there's something about that acknowledgement of what that initial relationship with money is impacts kind of how we view money our whole lives.
If I had given you my second memory,
it
would have been this. This is brief. When I was a very young, mom took me to some store, and I remember in that store seeing these erasers, and they were shaped like the Liberty Bell, like with the crack down it, right? Yeah, the Liberty Bell. And I thought, ooh, those are cool. And they were real smushy and cool, and I loved things like that. It was a real tactile little thing, and I wanted this eraser real bad, and I had no money, and I didn't really understand money, and I took one. I stole it.
Yeah.
And got home, mom says, wait, where did you get that? I don't remember what I said. And she says, that came from the store. That's bad. You've stolen that. We're going to go back there. You're going to give it to them. You're going to tell them what you did, and you're going to see what you can do to make up for it. So she marched me back there.
Yeah.
Typical, you know, let's teach the kid a moral moment.
Yeah.
And it worked. Went back, apologized, mortified, cried, handed it back, asked if there was anything I could do. And he just, I think the punishment was just, you know, never do it again. But thank you for telling me that's an important step, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So that all came and went. I think I went back later with dad or somebody at some point, and when I had money and I bought it. But in my mind, money then stood for moral. There was a morality to money that I didn't understand before, and now it was acute. And I still think about money that way. I still think of it as I'm a little too tight with it and careful with it for other reasons. Probably, you know, growing up as a teenager, we went through a period of there was no money.
Yeah.
And I lost everything that was worth money. And I think that has some bearing on how tight I am now.
Yeah.
But it suddenly was a thing where money would get you goods and services in a way that was respectable and meant that you were a good citizen and you were following the rules. And no money meant the opposite, that you would go down the path of having to take things because that was the only way you could get them. And so to me, there was suddenly this moral core to currency, which is probably true in some level, but it was overblown for me.
Right.
And it's never, that's never left. Huh. So anyway,
so he's not going to steal from you folks. That's good.
Yeah. I'm not taking your
own. Yeah. No. And that you did exactly what most people do is when I start this line of questioning, they'll have a memory. And then as we talk, another memory pops up.
Yeah.
And it's typically because you have, like any relationship with anything, it develops over time and with experience. So your experiences with money can drastically alter with a new experience, but most of it, for most people, unless, you know, something really traumatic or different happens, have this gradual buildup of what money means and the value of money. So and there is this power in just acknowledging what it is. So I'll give you an example with Adam. He and I both had periods of our lives where our parents were really poor.
Yeah.
And we have very different ways of viewing that. And I think part of that is Adam's dad was a very like traditional, you just, you know, scrimp and you work hard and, you know, and dad was like, dream big and do a little debt. And then, oh crap, this isn't working. Yeah, unless, yeah. You know, so for me, there was always like, it'll work out. It'll work out. It'll work out. And for Adam, it's like, it will never work out.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And here's an example when he was a kid, you know, back in the, what was that? The '80s. When powdered milk was kind of a thing.
I remember powdered milk.
Yeah.
I hated it.
It's disgusting.
I should have never have existed. I don't know what cow would see powdered milk and go, that came from me.
Yeah. It's no wonder we all have cancer. It's
awful.
Anyway. Yeah. So his...
You're going to go ahead and just correlate cancer to powdered milk. Okay, great.
So, and it was kind of a thing. Even like poor families weren't only drinking regular milk. They were also like, this is great. Anyway, yeah. Whatever. It was disgusting.
All right.
So when his family was struggling, they were having powdered milk. And they'd have real milk for cooking or some other thing in the fridge, right?
Yeah.
And so here's the way he took this. He took the, we can't afford it. So he would put water on his cereal. His sister would steal the real milk. This is the one who, you know, goes on to marry the investment banker and
can
make $1 billion off eBay selling crap.
Because she's savvy. I don't want to call her an opportunist. Yes, savvy. There you go.
There we go. That's a nice way. Whereas Adam is a self-control. I just will go without. Yeah. And his parents to this day are like, what were you doing putting water on your milk? He hated powdered milk really bad too.
Yeah.
So anyway, so that's him. And the other day we have this great conversation. I said, because we have not left Sweden, even though you'll probably be hearing this while I'm in Sweden.
This one you'll be, yeah, if you're hearing this now, Wendy's in Sweden.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But right now I'm not.
Right.
And so I said to him, let's talk about money because that needs to be a regular conversation in relationships. And I said, let's talk about money and tell me how you would do Sweden versus how you think I am going to do Sweden because that place is expensive.
How does he like it when you propose it in such a academic way?
He enjoys that.
Does he like that?
He's a nerd. Yeah. It's good.
All right.
Yeah. So he says to me, well, it's kind of a conversation killer, to be honest. He goes, well, we wouldn't have any fresh fruits or vegetables. So I was like, okay, so we're going to do it my way.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I don't want our kids to get scurvy while we're in Sweden. So anyway, so everyone has their own relationship with money.
Wait, I don't even know what scurvy is. It's just pirate disease. What is it?
Because you didn't get enough vitamin C. That's
is that what that is?
Yeah, you don't have fresh fruits.
I didn't know it was that specific.
Yeah.
Oh, I just thought, you got the scurvy because you've been on the boat too long.
It's because you haven't had a lime. That's how they started curing it. Limes aboard and they would
really
citrus yeah
and then people got Lyme's disease.
So now we've started with the individual. Every individual has some relationship with money at some point.
You can't avoid it.
Again, if you're not neurotypical, maybe you have a different route with money. Maybe autistic folks have a totally different sense of what money is, and it would be interesting. I don't know that, but
Rain Man made a lot of money in Vegas.
Right.
Yeah.
Did he care? Does he know?
He didn't really understand it.
Right.
That was more for Charlie Babbitt.
Because so you think about it, it's paper that has some crappy green drawing on it and hooker sweat or whatever. I call it stripper sweat. I meant stripper sweat. Anyway, like it's gross and it's probably pretty disease ridden. And then coins that only little kids know what they taste like because they're the ones tasting them and they're nasty.
Yeah.
That means something. And in some families, that might mean you're good enough. It might mean, it might be a power thing. I have power. I see so many families where adult children are being, their parents are still parenting adult children using money.
Well, there's also a real shift happening, I think, in the psychology of money because we are now moving ever quicklier. Much more quickly into an era where money, it already is just being represented by paper and by credit cards and things that have nothing to do with anything. They're just in our heads. It's all psychology. It's like, this is worth something. Well, how do we know that? Well, we're told it is. And so we just accept that it is. Right. And now it's exchangeable for goods and services. But we are hurtling toward a period, I think, where it's going to be way more vague than that, that cash will be a thing of the past in the not too distant future.
Yeah.
And that the only way you're worth anything is a couple of numbers on a printout or on a screen or on something that indicates that you indeed have something that And I worry a little bit that at some point society goes, this is just a construct and this was fake the whole time. So suddenly nothing's worth anything.
Right.
But anyway.
But then you got to go back to your skills and bartering and killing people in the street.
Yeah. You want chicken? Great. I have eggs. Let's make a change. Let's make a switch.
Right. And it's true. It is a construct. You sort of wonder when the meeting was where they're like, all right, everyone, believe in money now.
I don't know. That's fascinating to me. I'll bet there's economic like PhD people who totally get that and know where the origins are and where we're all going to end up or whatever. But to me, I find it confusing and fascinating at the same time and scary.
That's a bigger, broader view of this, which is also important to get to, which is look at the dysfunction on an individual level for one person.
Right.
Look at the functional relationship somebody might have with money with one person. Now, times that by 6 billion people.
Yeah.
And you have really interesting stuff happening on a bigger scale. So one thing I always think of, and no offense if you are a hedge fund manager, but you make $1 billion a year.
Yep.
And you use your tax loophole to do that. So you pay 15% tax like you're poor. And you just like swim in money and drink money and, you know, and I want to know. So the ramifications of that globally are a certain thing. But the ramifications of that within your own life, your own personal history. I mean, you often hear of people sort of losing it when they have money. So we have a long history of lottery winners.
Yeah.
And you may say, well, who are they to start with that they pick a lottery ticket? But who they are when they end up with that money, we can follow pretty well.
Sure.
And that is typically destitute.
Usually pretty bad.
And losing all sorts of relationships. So you might say, well, it's the slow growth of wealth that sort of teaches someone how to handle things.
Mm-hmm. And there's always some guy who won the lottery who's fine, right? I mean, they never get talked about.
Maybe one.
But I know they're a low percentage, but somebody out there's got to be like me. I have the whole plan if this ever happened to me. I know exactly what I do. I wouldn't move. I'd just pay off my house, pay off my cars. I wouldn't tell anybody. I wouldn't talk to anyone. If it came out on the news, fine, let that blow over after a little while.
Right.
News cycle's pretty quick these days.
Right.
And I would just invest in what I want to do and stay away from everybody else. Like if they all want to start asking me, well, they're not my friends anyway.
Right.
Like I've got a plan, man. And there's got to be other people out there who have successfully done that.
Right.
We don't hear about them.
It's probably very true, but there's also a reason you're not actively buying lottery tickets.
Yeah.
So because it's you don't believe you really have a shot, it's not a good use of spending your money because you already have an established relationship with money that does not include by chance I'm going to win $1 billion.
The math don't fly.
And you also have thought through what you're going to do with this because it just fits within the construct of how you view money, which is, well, I'll just pay off stuff and do good things. I mean, for me, it's like, I will change the world.
Right. For me, it would just
I should get the money.
I just won't have to worry about anything anymore and I won't do the stuff I don't want to do anymore.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, we have a lot of research on what happens to folks and they sort of lose it, right?
Yeah.
And part of losing it is, you know, who knows what the original psychology relationship with money is. And then also the forces that be. I mean, I'm kind of blown away. I am not I call them trashy mags, but like a fashion magazine or like whatever. Like
the kind of the checkout of this.
Yeah, yeah. So whenever I get my hair done and I'm sitting there and just washing my hair, which is seriously worth money. I love getting your hair washed. That's awesome. Anyway, sidetracked. I'll read one of those magazines while I'm waiting or whatever. And I like laugh out loud. Like I'm guffawing as I'm reading this because like the ugliest outfit I've ever seen. They're like, this is such a deal. And it's like $48 for this earring.
Yeah.
Or whatever. And they think it's this relative, but it's this arbitrary number that's being placed on things. And I'm always, because I don't buy any of that or think about any of that. When I do see it, I'm always like, did I miss the meeting where we said this was cool?
Yeah.
You know? And so there's a lot of like, hey, this is, you're valued if you spend money.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not directly implied to spend money, but in order to look a certain way, have the lifestyle created by.
Well, if you've got jet skis, the impression is that you have spent money and a decent amount of it. And that's because you value having this is a cool luxury item. And I think it's never like just, look at my fat stack of Benjamins, everybody, and flipping money in people's faces. It's the appearance that you're spending and you got all this stuff around you. And, you know, like I'll never forget Veronica Belmont, who was at Nerdtacular. She comes out to the house last year. It's just a really weird moment for me. And she said, Tom, she whispers to Tom as she's in the house. She goes, is Scott like rich or something? And I go, what are you guys talking about? And Tom's laughing because he knows. I said, am I rich? Are you freaking kidding me? I go, what do you mean? Why would you say that? She goes, this house is huge. And back where I live in San Francisco, this would be a like 8,000 or 8 million to $10 million here.
You're like, do you know that land here costs 4 cents an acre?
Yeah. And I said, this house costs me like 220K. She's like, oh, okay. Well then, yeah, I'm going to say, obviously not rich. Relative. But the idea is that you can create this illusion sometimes and be, you know, 100 grand in debt on your credit cards, but still have the illusion that you're loaded.
I actually love this idea that someone just is flipping Benjamins in front of you.
Yeah, just that's what rappers do. That's what rappers do.
Yeah.
In a way, works. I kind of like the purity of that because I just get straight to the
business. Yeah, like, let's be honest. I got a gold dollar sign.
Yep. I got a gold dollar sign hanging here.
And
I
in
got
my
money.
Name, there's a dollar sign in my name. I know.
I pay everything in cash. There are two hot ladies in bikinis right next to me. Like, it's all just
this
on
is
the face.
The dream. Yep. I know, right?
Yep. No subtlety.
So, yes. And this has always existed. You look at any culture in ancient times, it's like the haves and the have nots.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I think it's interesting. I was listening. I'm going to say it wrong. Is it the Gina or the Pina? I think it's Gina.
Pina.
Number, which is basically, you know, a researcher at some point was like, they really thought the difference between the most wealthy and the poorest in a country was constant over time. That was the original theory, economic theory, was it always remains the same. So there's 50 rich people, 200 poor people, that's going to kind of always exist, which clearly is not true.
No.
So anyway.
That seems silly now.
I know, but that was way back, right?
It's like world's flat kind of talk.
Yeah, exactly. So this guy came up with an index and figured out how to, you know, say, wait, that's not always true, and this is how you figure it out.
Well, did they burn him like a witch when he said it?
No, yeah, probably.
All right.
So 100, if you're at 100, that means one person has all the wealth and everyone else has none. So that would be the number 100.
Okay. All right.
If you were zero, that means everyone has the exact same amount of money. So wealth distribution, basically, right?
All right.
So the U.S. is in the 40s.
Yeah.
South Africa is the worst disparity, and it's a 63.
Oh, wow.
So you have way more money in the hands of the few.
Yeah.
Their 1%ers are like the 0.001%.
They're not even 1%.
Yeah. And then Sweden is the lowest with 23%.
Right.
And you know who throws it off is IKEA CEO.
Well, China's got to be, I don't know if you have China stats, but they have to be ridiculous giant margin.
Yeah, it's got to be.
Because there is a ton of money in China right now, but it is in very few hands.
Very few hands. Yeah. So then you look at that, and everyone's got their own reasons, and we'll talk about politics in another segment, but everyone has their own individual story relationship with money.
Yeah.
And then they go out in the world and unconsciously live that story, right? So going back to ripping on the bankers, what are they called? The hedge fund managers.
Those guys.
Is, you know, I always just think, what happened to you? Like, did your daddy not love you? Like, why are you so greedy? And not all of them are greedy, but there's definitely a level of, I can't be satiated. I can't get enough.
For sure. I mean, hedge funding generally is, it's a form of legal gambling, really.
Yeah.
Because you're hedging your bets, you're
predicting,
and you're trying to cash in on those predictions. And that's all it is.
Absolutely. And then you get the loophole. When is that loophole ever going to be shut?
Oh, so many loopholes.
So anyway, but again, it's sort of the, you know, and we found this has sort of been a trend recently, which is that kind of the brightest and smartest go into finance for the money. They don't go into medicine anymore. They don't, you know. And medicine, we have monetized to the extent that, you know, it's not, hey, we take care of people and we love people and it's like money, money. And that's maybe a perception from someone who's definitely outside of that. And, you know, friends who are radiologists that work 4 days a week and have 12 weeks off in this year.
Sure.
Make $500,000. Just doesn't seem right.
Yeah. It's a little unbalanced.
But then you're sort of like, okay, what does... back to this core idea. What does that mean? So you can sense my money story. It's pretty obvious.
Yeah.
that I think Sweden and wealth distribution should be different than it is. But I also am happy that people work hard and make money. I just don't know that it's really great for everybody.
Well, it's funny because there's some guys you could look at and go like, hey, Bill Gates, he seems like a guy, and this is purely from an outside perspective and having read a couple of books and heard him talk a lot and see what he's doing now. This is an accidental billionaire in a lot of really real ways. Yeah. That was never his goal. It was never, let's accumulate as much profit as possible. His company may have had that mantra for a while or still does. Outside of that, though, as a personal guy who was obsessed with technology and just wanted to make cool things, yeah, he's an accidental billionaire. Yeah. And I don't know that I can't fault a guy like that because it's just kept coming. It's not like he was like screwing people to get it.
Right.
He just kept coming.
Right.
And now that it's all there and he's at a place in his life where he doesn't have to focus on the things that he used to focus on, he's eradicating diseases single-handedly with his money. He's doing real work, like real important, impressive social health and economic work with his money. I don't think it's him we're complaining about.
No.
Or that some may complain about. If this isn't just hippie tree hugging, hey, everybody should be giving all their money to everybody else and let's live in a commune, I don't think that's what you're saying.
No.
But it would be nice if more people played like Bill does.
Well, part of why Bill plays the way Bill plays is because his motive was, I'm assuming here, his motive is not money. I think I'm taking this from Oprah, but you do what you love, and the money follows.
Sure.
Right? Like, it's inevitable that he's going to make money doing what he loved, because what he loved was a very lucrative thing to be doing.
And his timing was right. All the other factors kicked in.
Yeah, and he grew up near a supercomputer and all that jazz. But I also think there is one component here. Mm. He married the right lady.
Yeah, for sure.
She's awesome. And she totally turned him down when he first asked her out, by the way.
Yeah, I know. There's a bunch of great stories.
Yeah,
like
and
that.
She is solid. And so her money story is another thing too, right? So here's an example of like, oh, that is amazing, right? But then the question becomes, and this is my point. My point is not, you know, track down your local hedge fund manager and be like, you suck.
String him up.
Because I'm sure he's also very generous. You don't know. And there's no real judgment about anyone specifically. It's more of everyone has a responsibility to figure out their own junk, right? And when your own junk is, because money will make you miserable.
Sure.
If you are seeking that is the end goal of your life, it just, I mean, every era, we have a cautionary tale about this. There's a reason. But maybe, so let's get it back down to the individual. So you're listening, you're going, yeah, but if Bill Gates is great, you know, don't judge. It's not about that. It's about, how about you? And here's this idea. And I know there's a book and I can't remember the name of it. And I meant to look it up, but I think it might be called The Flow of Money.
The Flow of Money?
That's probably not it. But it has something to do with this idea that money, like water, if it's flowing, it's fresh and renewable and all that good stuff. When you just hoard it, this might be for you, Scott.
All right.
It gets stagnant and stinky. And it sort of
rots
you
a little bit. Kim's happy to sell the stagnant, to get that out and flesh it out. Don't worry.
No, I know.
And there's a wedding coming I got to pay for. So.
Yeah, I can only imagine. Yeah. I've just seen Kim's like facial creams. And I'm like, what? She is a store.
The money flow.
The Money Flow. Is that it?
I think so.
Yeah,
it says,
tell me the author.
Goodreads. It's written by, hold on, Money Flow by, oh, just skip. Okay, there it is. By Anna Weber Haber.
Maybe.
That says The Money Flow, How to Make Money Your Friend and All, Have a Great Life and Improve the World. Sound right?
Sound about right. But the idea, I mean, and I'm just taking the construct, I think it's that book, about, you know, you take Bill Gates. He could just get all curmudgeon-y and live in a kabillion mansions and never leave again,
he
right?
He could be like that owner of the Clippers who went all racist and got...
Yeah. See, if you don't spend your money on good causes, you get racist. Anyway, but sort of he's an epitome of... But there are plenty of examples where people have these childhood relationships that began, and it's sometimes tied with your dad. It's sometimes tied with your mom. It's sometimes tied with power. Sometimes it's tied with loss. I mean, we have some shopping addictions that are pretty significant in our culture, that it's a partly relationship with money, partly it's a high, whatever it is. Anyway, so all those things, you got to figure out what your stuff is and then create maybe a little more flow in your life. There's also another book, Your Money or Your Life by Vicki Robin. It's also kind of old school. It's probably from the 70s.
It sounds like a game show.
A little bit. Yeah. Anyway, but just sort of
your
like,
money or your life. Da, 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 da,
da. Like, what are you choosing? Your life or your money?
Yeah.
And I think people conflate the two. So I have a great example. A client was sort of middle-aged, older. Oh, man, I'm almost middle-aged. So he was
Yeah,
old.
What are you talking about over there? Know, you're getting there.
Anyway, he's an old guy. Not me, but old. And he...
Middle-aged is now 50 to 60, by
Oh,
the
perfect.
Way.
So he's middle-aged.
Yeah.
So he is a pretty successful dentist. You know, wife was always, improve the practice, make more money, you know. Pretty driven
sure.
people. And children that just suck to be his kids. Anyway, he had a couple ideas that happy families had. It was like a formula, right? Happy families had a piano.
Weird.
That you would all play the piano around and sing. Like, he had this in his head. So he buys a $150,000 grand piano.
Okay.
No one's played it, sat at it, touched it. And then he also heard from, you know, the grapevine that happy families go boating. So he buys a really nice boat. They've used it maybe 3 or 4 times. The kids are like,
this seems insane.
Uh-huh. And you think, what is wrong with you?
Yeah.
But all of us may do this to some extent because happiness is that new pair of shoes. What is that book from Charlie Brown? Happiness is...
Well, I understand connecting things or stuff to extend or participate in a happy thing, mm-hmm. but they're not the happy thing. The right. happy thing is me saying, hey, kids, new Marvel movie this weekend. We always love doing that as a family. Let's go.
Right.
Here's $50 movie theater. We're spending money on you. And it is. We have a great time. We have so much to talk about. We can't wait to see it again. We want to go watch all the old ones now. Let's fire up Netflix and see what the first Thor movie really, if it holds up to the third one or whatever. The point is, I know there's no third one yet, but the point is that you can, you know, people are really into video games because they know I'll see a game on sale and go, oh my gosh, Nick and I would have so much fun with this on the couch. And we do. I don't think that's what you're talking about.
No, because you have all sorts of things before the movie theater.
Yeah, that lead up to it, that establish those relationships. Yeah. It's not just boats are the answer.
Yeah, it's we go to the lake and we're playing in the rocks and we watch other boats go by and we're kind of dreaming about the day we can have a boat.
Yeah.
That would be a different thing to then get a boat because you already have the family context and relationship that item will provide. But if you go to any marketing advertising company and you can see this, I mean, I think REI does an amazing job of this, maybe because it speaks to me a little bit. You know, they have green skies and like purple, you know, because of the artistic look of it. But what they do is they create a lifestyle image of products, right?
Yeah, big time.
So you're like, I can be an awesome hiker with sweet calves if I buy that tent and I go to
IKEA does it too. They're like, my 500 square foot apartment can look like this.
Yeah. And the best thing about IKEA, by the way, is I don't know if anyone else looks at... I mean, real Sweden is not that cluttered.
No.
Holy crap, IKEA clutters rooms. And I think, this is family friendly, but it feels insane when I look at those pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, because they're creating...
I thought you were going to say the meatballs are the best part. But.
No. They create a lifestyle image, so you think you get the lifestyle when you buy the products. As much as we know that's not true, there is a reason we're doing it.
Yeah.
So they've figured out how to trick the parts of our brains, our quick thinking, you've heard of the book, Quick Thinking, Slow Thinking?
No.
Oh, it's really cool. So basically, we think we're making decisions by really thinking about it.
All right.
Is it quick thinking?
Quick thinking.
Or slow thinking? Look, should have done this before the show, guys. Slow. Sorry.
Well, let's see. Quick thinking. Thinking fast and slow?
Yeah, thinking fast and slow.
By Daniel Kahneman.
Yeah. Really interesting about how we are fooled into thinking we're making decisions by really, really going through the ideas and pros and cons, and but how our brain has really two formats, and one is quick and one is slow. So I look at an IKEA ad or an REI ad, and I think my quick thinking decision is right there, which is like, that looks awesome. Also, you know, my id is playing up, like, yeah, I want to do that.
Yeah,
and I don't want to be left out. Look at all those good looking people camping.
Oh, dude, I love REI, but not because I like camping. I hate camping. I'm not interested at all. I did that as a kid. I'm done. I'm good.
Yeah.
I want a hotel, whatever. So I'm totally not their target audience.
Totally.
But when I go in there, or Cabela's or something, love it. I love the feeling of everything. It's like, dude, we should get a tent like that one.
Yes.
They know what they're doing.
Absolutely. So I have a couple clients with some shopping addictions, and one in particular is her two drugs of choice are Nordstrom's and Target. Mm. And if you go into either of those places and sniff, I'll tell you who doesn't have this going on is Walmart.
Yeah,
those
Walmart, people, you go in there and sniff, you're like, did they get all the vomit or did they forget a corner? Like, what happened here?
It's like they ship it in. It's the sickest. And I've been in a brand new Walmart, still have the
still
smell.
Still stinks.
I'm like, what is it in your polymer?
Isn't that weird?
Ugh.
That's really weird.
And but so you self-loathe yourself while you're there. But you still go back for the cheap crap.
You go for the cheap.
So anyway, but Nordstrom's, I mean, it smells like heaven.
Like leather and vanilla.
Vanilla, totally. Yeah, it's always vanilla.
It's the stuff they use in Vegas a lot of these casinos, that vanilla that's piped through the Aria and stuff. It's just so nice.
So nice. So then you have the, and the lighting is done just so. And this woman said to me, she said, you mean Elise is not my friend? And I was like, Elise, the lady who works there? And she says, she's my personal, like, but I really think we're friends.
Wow.
And I was like, they have ensnared you, right? And Target's similar, like the dollar aisle. That's greatest place. And the color red. And I mean, they've got you, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
Apple Store does this to me.
Oh, Apple Store for sure.
Because I'll go in there and I'll go, I want everything right now in here. But then I think, you have that notebook, you have that desktop, you have that iPad, you have that phone, you have that iPod for your kids. You have everything you are looking at right now.
But you want a new
one. But I still want it? What the hell's wrong with me?
So guess what? They've already done it, which means you already own it, but they still can do it. I know. It's pretty impressive. Yeah. So you have to, you know, I think it's a tricky balance because our brains don't work real well with this. We tend to just go with how it feels right then, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And we have these predictions of our future happiness that are pretty inaccurate. So I will be so happy when I have the blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Anyway, so all of that combined, I think people are listening to this who are like, yeah, money, money, it's fine.
Money, money.
But there's many of you who have probably gotten in fights with your spouse about money. There's many of you who maybe a family member died.
Yeah.
And you watched the crazy happen.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Oh, like the swarm over who gets what.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say.
We saw that when my grandparents died. We saw that a little bit when dad died.
Yeah.
Like, there's still things I think we were supposed to have that we didn't. I mean, we're not broke up about it, but there was a lot of like, who's getting what?
Yeah, who knows?
I think when you guys go to Sweden, we're getting your hammock, right?
Yeah.
Sweet. That's all I care about.
You're getting our hammock. I should have brought that today. You're getting our hammock, and all my other neighbors have like dibsed on my furniture, and I'm like, you're creepy, everyone, but feel free. I'll tell you, I mean, moving is one of the greatest things you can do. The challenge is most people move and take their stuff with them.
Yeah, of course. Because they're just moving uptown or another state or something.
And so it doesn't change. And then you realize, wow, we have a lot of crap, right?
We realize, Meatball Central, man.
Yeah, we have a lot of crap. But we also realize we have 12 bags to take with us.
Wow.
It really narrows down your priorities, right? Like toothpaste, maybe some underwear. So anyway, it's a nice little midlife get rid of all your stuff. And see what you really care about. That's kind of an interesting. Like if you had to pack up and like haul it to California or whatever, and you had 5 minutes, what do you grab?
I mean, there's a little bit of that when you move because you have to make some evaluation, especially if you're downsizing or something. I mean, we knew we were going to have less rooms here, so there's a lot of like we got to get rid of a lot of these things, and you do kind of you're faced with your own value system. It's like, do I really care about that stack of DVDs I've had since '95?
Yeah.
Do I really care about this video game I'm never going to play again or whatever? But then there's all these like weird nostalgic value and like why, your tiny hoarder comes out a little bit and says, hey, what about me? And wants to have a stack of Mad magazines from the late 70s.
Yeah.
It's like at some point you have to reevaluate even then. But moving to another country where you can't really take anything but a few bags. I mean, that's really what you're doing.
Yeah.
And your kids. Yeah. That's it.
I know.
I can't even imagine.
So part of it's like Legos.
This whole idea freaks me out.
Big Lego fans. How do we like, which we got to pick a Lego bin that's small enough to stick in a bag. And then, so it's like the best Lego.
The rest of it, you should build an anatomically correct looking homeless man, put him on a bench in Salt Lake before you move and see if anyone notices for the next 2 years.
Ooh, that's not a bad idea.
Just leave it there.
We have a lot of Legos.
Yeah. That would be on the internet in like it's 5 minutes
flat. I know. It's really true, though. You used a phrase I think is really important, because this is, most of us can watch, you know, people watch reality TV and they're like, oh man, my life is awesome compared to Cops or whatever.
Right.
And then, but there's a part of us on every one of those shows that can see ourselves a little.
Yeah.
Or we're afraid to see ourselves. And that's kind of like, you can't look away. So you can't look away at a car accident because you think this could be me or someone I love.
Sure.
Right. So the little hoarder in everyone, there's real hoarding problems. But then every one of us has a little bit that doesn't get triggered until we start to have to get rid of something. So
they're digital hoarders.
There's definitely digital
hoarders. Yeah. They're people with like no actual crap in their life, but they have hard drives just stacked with stuff that they just never want to lose or have gone, or they back it up 5 times to Sunday, and that's crazy.
Yeah.
It doesn't take the same space, physical space.
And no one's looking at it unless they know what it is.
Same problem. Yeah.
But think about really how that gets created. There's an anxiety component. So people we're talking hoarders on the TV show level of hoarders have basically a form of OCD.
Yeah.
Not the kind that cleans up, but the other kind, which is, you throw this away and you're throwing away a piece of me.
Mm-hmm. So why The Odd Couple worked, because you had those two dichotomies in the same house.
Right.
The slob who was OCD about never throwing anything away, and the neat freak who was OCD about cleaning everything up. Yeah. Works out.
That's a good marriage.
Yeah.
But I think there's an idea here that's kind of cool, which is helpful to just to understand. Is we infuse value into objects. Right. And sometimes it's not until we lose the object that the value is infused into it.
Yep.
So it's been fun to have this mental game. So I will look at an object and I'll say, would I pay money to store this? And 100 times out of 100, no.
Right.
Because I have some weird ideas generally in life. And one is, I will never have storage space. Wonder where that came from.
We
don't have issues with that.
No, not in our family history.
No. And I just think it's a shame that there's more square footage for storage in this country than there is for living space.
Isn't that weird? Yeah. They should convert them all to living space.
It's a mess. And then move them to Sweden so I have somewhere to live when I get there.
Post-apocalyptic craziness.
Yeah.
So, is it true you guys live in a hostel for a while?
Oh, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I don't know what we're going to do.
All right.
People keep saying, can you blog about this?
Like, you should.
You want to see me homeless in Scandinavia?
You should do an audio blog. I'll post it for you every time you submit one. Okay. You guys should chronicle your experiences over there. I'm telling you, it'd be a huge deal.
Huge. It'll be like,
people would love it.
Here we are.
Yeah, it was like, all right, we just got to Iceland.
$4.5 million banana.
There's a guy named Bjorn next door who won't stop yodeling, so we don't know what to do. I'm telling you, it'd be fascinating.
And when we eat, no fresh fruits or vegetables.
That's right. The youngest has scurvy, and
Adam does this. He's got his Google Map thing of the city we're moving to, which is Göteborg.
What's called?
Yeah, Gothenburg if you're American. Anyway,
what? Why is it Gothenburg if you're American?
Because that's it in English. It's Göteborg in Swedish.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
They say G's weird. I'm just saying it.
Okay.
It's spelled Gothenburg.
How would you say gopher butt in Sweden then? Gopher butt?
Gopher butt. I don't know. But all I know is I spoke to a Swedish guy a little bit and I just channeled the Swedish chef. And he was like, wow, your accent's really good.
Really?
Like, oh my gosh.
Oh, that's not good. That's not good, a Swedish chef.
It's a song. They sing. It's like it's almost a tonal language, really. Mm. It's not like Chinese where the tone means something like, I like you or I'll kill you, depending. But it's singing.
All right.
Anyway, it's the guy from Frozen. Oh. We've got the clogs on sale.
Oh, that guy's that great. Guy. Yeah.
Anyway, my point is, I forgot. Oh.
Yeah,
oh, will I pay?
Point?
Sorry, will I pay to store something? Which the answer is no.
Same here.
Or can I shove that under the crawl space of my house that we're leaving here to rent out?
Yes.
You know, or yes, or can I buy that again? Is that something I want to buy again? Is that something I could never even remember I had? So it's this bizarre experience to go through your entire life and go, A, who put all this crap in my house? And B, and we have a small house. Sure. This is not.
No, you guys aren't. This you is not, are not excessive. No, no, no.
But I swear we must be hoarders because I just cannot understand how that. You know what it is? You accumulate one thing at a time.
Yeah.
And now we're getting rid of everything at once.
Yeah. Your ship only gets one barnacle on it to start with. Eventually, it's a giant nightmare you got to scrape off. You're going to
later.
Sink.
Yeah. But it's what's interesting is it is one of the most liberating things I've ever done.
Really?
Amazing.
I understand that feeling. It's really hard for me, though. Causes real anxiety
turmoil.
For me.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't even know. There's things in this cup here in front of me on my desk that I don't need probably any of this. There's a couple of things maybe, but.
But if I walk away with it.
I would be like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I need to look. I mean, the cup actually is, I'm more interested in it because it's got a logo for one of my shows on it. And I like that, but. There's 90% of that is junk.
Yeah.
And this screwdrivers, I guess, is useful. We could put that in a toolbox where it freaking belongs instead of in this cup.
Right, right.
But that's going to be true of just about every box in my furnace room over there. A lot of what's piled up here, like, I struggle with that. It's definitely hard. I get that. You always say we get it from our parents or whatever. Our dad totally did this.
Yeah.
He had a horrible time getting rid of it.
Well, part of it is a scarcity that gets dad's relationship with money.
Yeah.
Was, I don't know when it started, but he had a really hardcore farmer type dad. So I'm assuming it was a dad issue or something. Yeah,
probably.
But it was also like, live your dreams. Money is an avenue to live your dreams. So if we don't have enough, we'll scrape some up somewhere.
We'll figure it out. Yeah.
Which is why he's washing off the quarter. You know, I need that quarter to pay the cheap babysitter.
Right.
But also, when you go without And scarcity, people can be billionaires and feel scarcity. Scarcity is a state of mind, not a actual value or an amount or something. But I think when you've experienced scarcity, you tend to hold on to stuff because you never know when you're going to get it again.
Yeah.
And I think we have, you know, a little bit of, everyone's got a little hoarder in them because we have all, everyone's done this where I've thrown something away.
And then went, oh.
And I swear 3 months later, it's like, where is that one doohickey I never used, but I now need?
Had it for 10 years, threw it away last week.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. And part of that is actually just your brain. Your brain goes, remembers it had something for the 10 years you never used it. It actually was never in your brain.
It's like probably the same thing. It triggers a coincidence to seem like a magical moment.
Yes.
Like we all think, my toast has Jesus in it because his face is right there on the toast. No, it's a coincidence. You just happen to have a pattern recognition moment with a piece of toast.
Right.
Jesus didn't go, you know what? I'm getting to him by putting my face on the toast.
I think I will touch his heart with
this
my toast.
This is how it's going to work. Don't put jelly on me just yet.
So explain this. I was telling Scott this on the way here. Pete got out. Of the cage.
Pete is the youngest.
Pete's the turd. Yeah. Anyway, he has never even crossed the street and we were all busy doing stuff and suddenly, where is he? And he'd crossed the street, walked down on the sidewalk, and gone to the edge of
a very busy street.
Which is quite a bit of ways.
He's two, by the way.
Two and a half.
Yep.
The neighbor, who's an idiot, just smiled at him as he drove by. Like, oh, are you talking about the kid who's little? I'm all, oh, gosh. Anyway.
Wow.
Is this a coincidence or is this just cool? A family was driving by and saw him, and she looked over and thought, well, that kid probably doesn't belong on the edge of the street in his pajamas with no shoes on.
Yeah.
And it was clients of mine from 4 years ago.
Absolutely convenience, or actually absolutely a coincidence.
Yeah.
Still cool.
Still way cool.
Oh, yeah, it's great. And you'll always have this great story,
but also,
and you're really grateful
part,
to them.
The coolest part is that they are like, they lose a kid a day. So no judgment, just loving. Right. So happy to help.
You're glad it was them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Money, anyway, money, money.
Money.
Back to money.
So money.
Yeah.
Money. Money is a trippy thing. Before we close this one out, it's easy for, well, let me just ask you this. From a clinical experience point of view, when a couple either decides separate bank accounts or joint, like in Kim and I's case, I honestly, I'd be dead if Kim didn't manage our finances.
Right.
I need her to do it because I'm bad at it.
Yeah.
Really bad at it. I would make bad decisions, not because I would be frivolous with it. I wouldn't. I would just screw up and go, oh, I didn't account for that. And the tax guy would be going, oh, dude, you're screwed. The IRS is going to kill you. You know, like all these things wouldn't happen without Kim doing that. Also, I totally trust her and she totally trusts me. And nobody's using a credit card for anything weird and nefarious. We both have visibility and everything. There's no like checking on each other and none of this kind of stuff. It just is a big, open, transparent kind of arrangement.
Right.
But I have plenty of friends my age who are the total opposite of that. Wife has her own stuff, her own account. He basically gives her an allowance, or sometimes it's the other way around. She gives him an allowance in some other relationships.
Yeah.
Who's at most risk for bumping heads, or are all these valid and they're fine?
Well, I would say what's valid is what works where both people agree.
Yeah.
Because money, we haven't talked about this because you and I don't have this relationship with money, and but I do hear this a lot, which is that people use money to control other people.
Yeah.
So, I wondered about that. You and I don't know about your in-laws per se, but in our case, my in-laws and Adam's in-laws, which are my, you know, whatever old people in my life, we have never, ever, not even for 1 second, thought we would inherit a dime.
Yeah.
So when we got married with 25 bucks to our name.
Yeah. I had 50, so we had you beat, but that was it. Yeah.
And
nothing.
I mean, we had this idea of, you know, it's just us. And then no inheritance because we're going to be taking care of them. So we plan for that.
Plus, nobody's going to hand you $5,000 and say, have a great honeymoon or whatever.
Oh, no.
Not in our lives.
Not even close.
Nope.
And fortunately, Adam and I have a similar enough background that there isn't a lot of conflict around entitlement or I want this and I deserve this, that kind of, we just never got anything. So we know we work for it. We get it. Right.
Right.
But we do have, I mean, here's a perfect example. Is mom going to listen to this one?
Probably.
Anyway,
she's all into it right now.
People asking for things
and
not offering anything. Like, you know, we've given some things away and it's just never in our experience for someone to say, well, how about we offer you to pay for that?
Or right.
How about,
plus we never ask either.
We help blah, blah, blah. And you just, it's just a foreign experience. But what it means is that we do certain things certain ways.
Yeah.
We have expectations that are certain things. And we're no better than anyone else because there's going to be plenty of people who have inheritances coming.
Yeah.
And they have that planned.
Sure.
They're thinking that's
coming.
They're
thinking it's on its way.
And that could really backfire, or that also going to be a fine thing.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah, no judgment toward that.
No,
I never had any.
It's just super not in our experience.
It's not part of our wheelhouse,
Right. So, but then you take a couple who, she comes from a lot of money and things just kind of float easily. And then he's, you know, pretty tight and he was controlled with money. What do? You control her. You do what you know. That's why this tip of the carrot thing is really important with money, is where does this originally begin? So when I have couples come in and I ask them the big five, do you fight about money? Do you fight about sex? Do you fight about chores? Do you fight about in-laws and children?
Yeah.
It's typically sex and money, and it's typically some control issue.
Yeah.
So then we do this exercise of where does this start for you? What's the story? And how is that impacting how you're interacting with money right now? And it's cool. It just kind of loosens up all the grip money has. Because when was the last time, if ever, you've thought about your origin story with money in the context of what it means to you as opposed to I chose
today was the last time.
Right.
I don't remember. Maybe the first time. I don't think I've ever really thought about it.
They just don't. And they don't, you know, I'll tell you mine. I haven't told you my origin story.
No.
So mine was when we lived in Royal Lane.
Yeah.
So we had a big house.
Yeah. Big house, big neighborhood. Home. Everybody's really into
boats,
appearances
and
money.
We had all that, jazz. And I was five.
Yeah.
And probably I'm a serious eavesdropper.
What was I like? We moved there when we were 11. I was 11. So
okay.
Yeah. I'll give you some context.
So I was young enough that I didn't really know what the heck was happening, but I am an eavesdropper.
Oh yeah.
I do it everywhere. I can't help it. Anyway,
my daughter gets that from you.
Anyway. I know. It's so fun.
Yeah.
It's just interesting. Anyway, so I knew
sure
the money was tight. I knew it was a struggle. I knew, you know, I knew Dad couldn't pay the mortgage.
Yeah.
So I got 76 cents together.
Yep. I remember this.
And then I gave him the money.
Yep. He told that story all the time.
Yeah. And I said, you can use this for the mortgage. And so I feel like for me, it was,
you know, what's sad. I think the mortgage was like $850.
I know.
It was cheap
back in the day. Yeah. I mean, that was like a $200,000 house. But in the day when there was, 16% interest on homes?
This has been like 83, 82.
Yeah.
That's
weird. It was a huge house. Now it's probably a $1 million house.
Oh, yeah. No, you buy that new today? Easily.
Yeah, in that neighborhood. Yeah. Anyway.
It's disgusting. $180,000.
I gave him the money, and he just, like, burst into tears. Yeah. And, of course, I'm like...
You'd think, like, what the heck is going on?
I don't want to move.
Yeah.
I don't want loss. Like, that's what it meant, is if you don't have enough money, you lose sort of safety and security. And I think what our parents did a good job of...
Pretty good.
...is still creating enough safety. But I found that, like, I could really help somebody.
Yeah.
And it was 76 cents.
Yeah, that's barely enough to choke me.
Yeah, couldn't even have killed a kid on that. Anyway, right. But so I think that's why I get real into, let's give money to everybody. Because that's my origin story. Mm. And, you know, when people need something now, I don't even think twice. Fortunately, Adam has that too, but he does have a little bit of no fresh fruits or vegetables.
Yeah, no, I'm a little more on the Adam side, and Kim is totally like you. If there's, like, I just know if somebody's going to be like, oh, yeah, we're struggling with this, or somebody will say, we can't, not all the kids can go to this camp because whatever. Kim will just go, well, here, let us help. Here's $200.
Yeah.
And I'm the one that goes,
oh,
there goes the vegetables in front. You know, a little bit.
So we balance you guys out.
Yeah, I think so.
So I think, I think there's another component here that's really important, is that people get married and divorced way too quickly. They assume, there's reasons for that, sure. But I also think we assume it's supposed to just click and be awesome right away. It takes years.
Yeah.
Years of coordinating. How do we deal with our differences in our money story, or, you know, how do we talk about these things? And you get to there. You get to that point. I think we're such a quick, well, mom's not working, I'm out, you know?
Yeah.
And it requires change and whatever. But I just want to throw this challenge out to anyone listening. To do this money story thing with someone you love, just sit down and tell them your first memory about money and talk about it, and then let them share theirs. And you'll be shocked at how that kind of sort of loosens up the mortar that you just didn't even know was in there about money.
Well, I think that's a good place to end. I hope everybody listening, tell us your money stories. You can do that by going to frogpants.com/therapy. There'll be a way to contact us there and tell us what your origin story is. I think that would be fascinating to learn. We'll be back next time with episode 8 of this show. Hope you guys enjoyed this one about money. I have no idea what our next topic is. Is it politics and tribalism? Ooh, that'll be fun. So tune in for that. We'll see you guys next week for another therapy show. Bye. Say bye, Wendy.
Oh, bye.